Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. I'm sorry, I got really excited there. I haven't tuned in before. This is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. Well, right now we're up to episode 9 of season 6. This one is called The Quality of Life, directed by Jonathan Frakes, good old number one, written by Naren Shankar, and the story goes to L.J. Scott. It aired back on November 16th, 1992. This is the one with the exocomps. A scientist invents these little robots that can fix things, but they seem to be sentient, and they seem to be alive. Or something. The episode's not quite sure. Anyway, Tana and Sean are here to talk about this one with me. It's Quality of Life right after this.
I gave you a direct order, Mr. Data. You release that transporter lockout now.
I cannot do that, sir.
If you don't do it, I will relieve you of duty.
That is your prerogative, sir. Under Starfleet regulations, direct insubordination is a court-martial offense. But I will not release the transporter.
Data, those are two of your friends out there. They have saved your life more times than I can remember. I can't believe you'd be willing to sacrifice them like this.
Commander, please do not think this is an arbitrary decision. I have considered the ramifications of my actions carefully, and I do not believe it is justified to sacrifice one life form for another.
You don't know that the exocomps are life forms.
It is true, I am acting on my personal beliefs, but I do not see how I can do otherwise.
Never in an episode have I felt the astute longing for Miles O'Brien as I do in Quality of Life, where his subpar replacement is now, I think his name is Kelso. Yeah, Kelso. Kelso, the transporter chief, can't really, he can't cut the mustard the way
he
the
really can't.
Are. It's just not as good.
Nope.
Where is O'Brien?
Deep Space Nine.
Oh, so they didn't really give him a send off.
Oh, Rascals. TNG. Rascals was his last episode, and he's no longer on the show. So we're just going to be stuck with Kelso, which is too bad.
Oh, that's such a bummer.
Yeah. I guess it's more signifying that we're moving to the end of TNG, I think. A lot of my notes for these episodes are, this is so-and-so's final appearance on Next Generation, so that's what that means. We're getting close to Guinan's final appearance. We're getting close to, well, we passed O'Brien, and I'm sure there's going to be a few others. I think probably... Oh, obviously in the next episode we're going to talk about, but we're going to open this up by talking about Quality of Life.
All right.
Quality of Life. I didn't mean to do this, but we're going to be talking about Quality of Life and Ship in a Bottle with you guys today. I didn't realize how similar thematically they were, which I guess ties into the fact that I guess Star Trek is going to talk about life a whole bunch, but I'm going to open this one up by saying, for a science-based show, like a science-based episode, that Quality of Life is, it is amazingly unscientific.
Oh my God.
And kind of dumb.
I know.
Yeah.
So it's, I'm going to start this by just saying they do the same thing that Measure of a Man does. And can you guys tell me if they're doing this because they legitimately don't seem to understand the difference, or they're trying to dumb down the content for the people watching? Why does the show confuse life with sentience constantly? All the time.
I don't know. And there were just so many, like, I thought what they were doing was something philosophical. The conversation Data has with Beverly about how do you describe life, and the thing about fire, you know, would you say fire is alive? We don't say crystals are alive. So they're definitely trying to come at it with some sort of a philosophy slant, but they just miss it so completely.
Well, it's because what they're talking about is not life. Like, it's irrelevant whether or not the exocomps are alive at this point. It's whether or not they are sentient creatures that, that think for themselves. And the show makes it confusing because it keeps trying to tell me that they're alive, and it doesn't matter at all. Like, Data is, in my understanding or my use of the word alive, Data is not technically alive. He is sentient, which is... Yep. In a sense, more important than actually being alive. Alive to me just implies some kind of biological function.
Yeah, like
biological nature.
They mentioned viruses. You know, Data says there's a difference between you, Dr. Farallon, and a virus, but you're both alive. you know, and he's using that as a way of describing the difference between him and these little machines.
Yeah.
That they are to him what a virus is to her. But it just doesn't work. Like, it just doesn't.
Well, I don't think viruses are alive. Like, that's the difference there.
Yeah, they're not making decisions. They're not decision-making creatures, right? Like, you think they're trying to analyze whether or not it's... And these exocomps are not only making decisions, but they're making decisions that go contrary. Like, they're making noble human decisions, right? Yes, yeah. And yeah. Why would one of them ever stay behind to save the other two? At what point would a virus, like, do that? Like, they just, there's no...
Well, that's the different, right? Like, you can break it down by saying, we don't really care if things are alive, because I can eat all the oysters I want and not feel bad about it, because oysters are incapable of experiencing suffering. So there's no problem with eating them. Oysters are alive, but they're not sentient. So you can eat as many oysters as you want and not feel bad about it, where it's more disturbing to destroy the exocomps because they seem to be aware of themselves and their situation. So they could, therefore, if not experience pain, they'd be upset by the fact that their life has ended as they know.
Right, that they're being murdered.
And I will come back to this, but my other sort of weird issue with this is I feel that the exocomps are a kind of technology that the Federation should already have.
Yeah, if you've got Data, how do you not already have exocomps? And I think it's confusing. They're a weird, they hover and they have little like robotic arms, and you kind of have to let that stuff go. You can't really pick at that stuff because it's going to crumble. It won't make any sense. But if they have Data, why isn't this Dr. Farallon, who seems to have backed into some sort of version of artificial intelligence, similar to Data, something that can learn and that has neural pathways that, like, you know, it's adapting to its environment? Why isn't she super excited about the fact that she's created these like viral datas instead of this mining operation that she's doing? Like, the whole focus of the episode seems to be in the wrong spot.
They were very interested in the mining
aspect. Yeah, they wouldn't let it go. She created robotic life that learns and is noble and can make decisions for itself to shut itself down and heal thyself. And she doesn't care at all. Like, she, at no point.
But she respects Data. Like, she makes it clear to be like, well, Data is clearly awesome. We all know that. But this robot is completely feelingless, thoughtless.
Why? Because she brings up a good point that the exocomps are supposed to be tools, in a sense. Like, I understand what you guys are saying. Like, the episode does kind of fall apart because she seems nonplussed by the fact that she just basically created a life form.
Yeah.
And she's much more interested in the tools that these things are, basically a little hoverboard with like the technology of them just doesn't make sense to me. It's a robot that you think would make sense, that you can send into a dangerous situation.
Yeah.
And it has a replicator on its face that can turn into whatever tool it needs.
Yeah.
And the people on the crew are like, are you fucking kidding me? This is groundbreaking shit. It's like, I feel like this is the only way they would ever build things in the future.
Right. But, and exactly. Like, we, even right now, you know, and I understand the show is 25 years old, but we have those like robot, like bomb detecting robots that have video cameras and, you know, they can climb stairs and they can, like, you know, I don't know, take apart bombs and stuff. So we have things like that now.
I know the show is unwilling. Sean, what did you think on their handle of what they were actually talking about? And what do you think this episode is about? I guess let's start there.
Oh man, what is it about? And it wants to be take a profound look at what life is, but I feel like we've done that. This is an episode to me that feels like a mishmash of other episodes already done.
Measure of a Man.
You have an outsider who comes in and she either respects Data or she doesn't. And we've had two other characters, one who tried to prosecute him, who didn't respect him, one who loved him, hated him, but then when he started talking like her long lost son, she came around.
Yep.
And this character feels like round three of that, but she's the least updated in that she respects Data, but then she falls into the same similar, you know, that doesn't see, I don't know what I'm
what's
trying to say.
Yeah, it doesn't see what's like special or what the difference is, I guess, in there. And it comes across as, she comes across as sort of schizophrenic a little bit, and that her character doesn't really have a clear arc throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, she invents these, the exocomps are the names of these little devices, and they look like, they remind me of robotic piggy banks.
They do look like robotic piggy banks.
And they fly around and fix things, and they eventually develop the ability to not do what they're told, which sends data off on a process of determining whether or not these things are, in his words, alive, but it would be better to describe them as sentient. And ultimately, they save the day by rescuing Picard and Geordi from what seems to be the worst mining technology disaster since, like, those Argentinian or Chilean coal miners got covered up. I don't know. It's kind of a dull episode. I think I agree with you, Sean. I've seen this before. Measure of a Man did it okay for second season. And I don't know. I don't think the show was written by the science consultant who they hired to be a staff writer, Naren Shankar, I think his name is. And I'm sort of appalled by the lack of understanding of science in this episode, I think is my major problem with it. Besides it being boring.
I imagine imagine him coming home from dinner. These fucking guys that hired me to do one job, they asked me to come in, and what did they design? They designed these electric piggy banks. So they asked me if I think they could be alive, but no. Like, what are they even paying me for? Like, what is his bad day at work back in 1992? Because they hired him to be the consultant, and it's so clear. They're like, what do you think, Bob? And he gives them like a reasonable explanation. They're like, yeah, but that's not what we're gonna do.
I wonder why they even hire science consultants. It's like you give them something and they come back and you're like, well, that kind of fucks up my story, so I'm not going to really do that.
Yeah, they hired him just to brag and like, well, we have a NASA guy on staff. He's a consultant all the time. And then they go, but we never listened to him.
He's not
There was that that conversation that Dr. Farallon or whatever her name is has with
Data. Remember her name. I do not remember her name.
I had to make a note of it because I didn't remember it. But I was like, well, if I'm going to podcast about it later, I should probably know who the main character is. But she was having a discussion more in depth about the way that Data works than I remember having.
Yeah.
During the series to this point. And so, like, she's asking him about his neural pathways, and they're talking a lot of sciencey jargon. So maybe the science consultant had something to do with that.
Yeah, I'd imagine it was a lot of techno babble, which, I mean, just ties into the fact that she doesn't make sense
because
she's very
interested
in how Data works and not interested in how these little robots work.
Yeah, and Dr. Sung is known throughout the universe, right, as a brilliant inventor. He's very well known. She's familiar with his work. Like, she was very excited to meet Data. And again, she's sort of accidentally replicated a non-biological life form, right, capable of decision-making and learning and evolving.
Yep.
And she just doesn't – there's no reason for that character to not be super jazzed and excited about the possibility of what she's invented. And instead, she just wants it to be a tricorder. She just wants it to, like, go into the mine to help them do their mining project.
Yeah.
So it just kind of falls apart when you look at it, you know?
She's got this shitty mining operation to maintain, which the episode ends with them being like, yeah, we'll call you in a couple of years. Maybe you'll get your shit figured out by that point.
But
I wonder if they could, to Tana's point, I wonder if they could have made her as Tan is describing, like, get her excited. Like, she accidentally did what Soong did.
Yeah.
She's jazzed. She's on Data's side. And give me a different character that thinks that they're just tools and wants to sacrifice them to save whatever. Like, I don't see why she had to be arced to Data like that.
Right. Well, I think they ran into a problem because this doctor exists in a Federation type universe. I think she's a part of the Federation. Or maybe not, because they're not selling, but they're trying to give their technology to the Federation. So I think she's outside the Federation, but she seems to exist in their utopian, like, post-currency type situation.
Yep.
So if she existed from a culture where them not being able to use the exocomps in this way would, like, impact their bottom line, it makes a little bit more sense. It would add some reason for her to be upset, but as the show exists now, there's no downside besides the fact that her repairs are going to take a little bit longer to not use these things, so it doesn't really matter at all.
Right, and she was trying to sell the technology of this new mining system to Geordi and the Enterprise, and they're going to make an analysis. They're going to say to Starfleet whether or not they think this new approach to mining, which is completely separate from the exocomps, is worth, you know, continuing. There's a new mining colony, Geordi says early in the episode, and, you know, they might implement these same techniques. And so they have to make a report. Do we think these techniques are working? So the exocomps aren't even the thing that they're there for. Like, those are just something she invented to make the mining process she's trying to develop go better.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Except it, but it's stupid. It's just mining.
I know. I don't even understand why they mine. If they could replicate everything, why do they mine at all?
Or beam it out of the
right
or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. Don't like go down and drill. It's funny because in Rascals, which we just watched, we were laughing because the Ferengi enslave the crew and make them mine. And it's like, all right, well, I guess I don't understand why you wouldn't just beam it out, like you were saying. Yeah, it's very. I don't know. I feel this episode is such a like a middling type thing. The one thing that really stood out to me was the Riker and Data confrontation, where Data has locked out the transporters to be unable to save Picard and Geordi. And it only sticks out because the show is so non-conflict that it's kind of surprising and shocking whenever the two crew members actually sort of get into an argument with each other.
Right.
I like that scene. What'd you guys think of that scene?
I liked it too.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing Roddenberry wouldn't have allowed.
Yeah.
But, fuck him.
I like it. I mean, there's the argument kind of makes sense. I wish they had focused more on that kind of difficult situation. You know, even though Riker kind of agrees with Data, he's in a difficult position where he needs to figure out what to do. Data comes up with the solution of ask the exocomps what they want to do, and they decide to go there. Well, we're never given a great reason why the exocomps would decide to do this, and ultimately sacrifice themselves to radiation. Although,
well, it's funny. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm done. Go ahead.
I was going to say, Riker's the one that suggests, hey, why don't we ask the exocomps what they want to do? I feel like that should have been Data's line.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
When Riker said that, I thought his next line would be like, just kidding. They're not even real. Like, it just seemed a little bit out of what he was willing to believe in that moment.
Yeah, he should have asked Data, like, hey, what's that over there? When Data turned around, he hits that power switch, because Riker knows about his power switch and continues on. I guess they needed him to unlock the whatever he had done. Yeah, I agree. It should have been a Data through line. I'm always kind of surprised when Data doesn't come up with a obvious solution very quickly, just because of the way he works.
What did you guys think about the beards discussion in the cold open?
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
It felt like
you blocked it out. You blocked it out.
They had. I don't mind the scene, but it felt like they had They were 5 minutes short, and they needed a way to come up with something.
Well, when he says like when he wants to see Beverly as a brunette, I'm just imagining what he's actually thinking.
I know. Yeah, there is the original script version of that did not make it to air, but. His reaction when he's like, ooh, I'd like to see that. It's like, really? You'd like to see it with brunette hair? That makes a lot of sense.
Oh, my God.
They could have come up with something better. I'd have to imagine those episodes. Because this is episode 3 of Geordi with a beard. The previous episode had him with a beard, and now he's in his finale with the beard, which does not last, unfortunately.
So they had to. Yeah. They felt like they had to say something about it?
Well, there's been the episode previous to this, Fistful of Data's, they bring it up in the episode just kind of awkwardly. They're like, hey, Geordi's got a beard. And it's like, all right, well, back to the episode. And in this one, they continue bringing it up. I don't know if the writers were having a beard-off competition or something.
It felt to me like there must be something going on behind the scenes. Like, that seemed more of like, I don't know, like a writer... You know, whatever's going on in the production, you know, maybe everybody that was building sets was like going on, I don't know, a beard kick or something. And so they worked it in.
I sort of disagree with the point being brought in. So Beverly is kind of arguing that beards are, she calls them an affectation. And so the definition of that is behavior, speech, or writing that is artificial and designed to impress. So I think it totally disagrees with artificial. So that's wrong. And I don't know I think she's wrong about that. Although none of them give a great answer. I would assume that most people who have beards are, it's because they're too lazy to shave every day. That would be my answer as to the answer. Like I'm sure there is a small subset of people who grow beards for to like be impressive, because those are the people I see on those TV shows that like beard off or whatever they're called, and they put like seashells in their fucking beard. But no, I think it's mostly just a laziness thing.
I would love to see Riker with seashells in his beard.
Go crazy. I just have to imagine that maybe in the future it would be an affectation, because shaving, I'd imagine, would be instantaneous and done via some sort of system. Yeah,
you would just beam the fur off your face into a mop.
You have a follicle destimulant that you, rub in. So, but it was so weird, right? She was trying to make it, she was asserting that beards are, as, you know, to men, what makeup is to women. And it just felt like such an uncomfortable conversation. So I completely agree. You're allowed to decide your appearance. If you want to grow a beard, grow a beard, you know, like, step off, Bev.
Yeah, it felt to me like
she never trusts anyone with beards. Right. Well, I think that's on you, dude. I think maybe you need to look at that on your end.
That was basically her saying, "I don't trust you, Riker."
Yeah,
and then he started to tell her how she should be a brunette. She was spot on.
Get your hands away from me. Yeah, I just thought it was a weird scene. I appreciate scenes like that, because they're very few and far between where you actually see crew interaction. Yeah. I didn't understand what the point in terms of like what they were trying to say was.
Yeah,
argue against her, I guess, would be my advice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you think that they're tucking more of these character notes in? You've seen every episode up until now, and I just sort of helicopter in here and there. But are they, in season 6 specifically, adding more of these little like moments between them?
They definitely are, because I had the whatever me and you did, Sean, last time was I can't remember.
Schisms.
Yeah.
Schisms, that's right. Whatever that, when we were talking about that episode about how the TNG crew doesn't really have a lot of moments, I've gone on a tilt of every episode after that has been people having moments like this. So it's like, well,
yeah.
I guess I was wrong at that point. But the show, Tanda, the show is definitely trying to insert more of these things into it. To varying degrees of success, they don't always work. And I'm really starting to come of the opinion that the TNG crew is not particularly built for it. They don't have relationships that are particularly friendly. Like, they're very professional with each other, and nothing ever really gets very crazy.
I thought that was interesting. I think you and Sean talked about how it has sort of the Enterprise has a from the top down coldness, a professionality about them that, you know, feels more like, you use the word like coworkers or something, colleagues maybe, rather than friends, rather than family.
They don't hang out. There's these poker games, which are, they're wearing their uniforms. You know, they're never wearing casual clothing. They're always just getting out of work or going into work or something.
Yeah.
So it's a very dressed down type thing.
Yeah. I have a side note. When Tana went back and listened, I'm like, oh, that's nice. I appreciate it when one of us listens to the other one's podcast, even if you're not in it. And I asked Clay this once. Because I asked him, "Hey, did you hear the podcast I did with Wes?" And he said, "No." And I thought, isn't it like a social faux pas not to support your friends? And
I'm pretty sure Clay is a dick.
No, I didn't listen. Didn't listen to that one.
I mean, what's the podcast etiquette? I feel like he should listen to all of these, which is why I'm fine bringing this up, because he's never going to hear this one.
That's true. You can layer whatever you want.
We need the shame bell. Shame, clang, clang.
Oh, yeah,
shame,
totally.
Clang,
that's,
clang.
That's, I guess I have a different, slightly different point of view, because I've done all of them. I don't listen to any of them over again. I edit them and I listen to the little bits where to make sure everything works okay, but I never listen all the way through. Which do you think is worse, to listen to the one that you did or to not listen to the ones that other people did?
Tana, what do you think?
What do I think? I like listening to this podcast, so I enjoy your conversations. So I listen. I like Clay's voice, so I definitely listen to the Clay podcast.
He's the ASMR version. I should just put that tag on. And put it with
Modi is a lot of fun too. I like when Modi's nerdiness comes comes burbling through. I think that that's very charming. So I enjoy it a lot. But I can't believe he doesn't listen to our podcast.
Maybe he does.
Well, if we should talk him on Twitter after this so he knows he's featured, he's going to listen to this podcast.
There was one where he had to insert his opinion, right? Because he was supposed to do it.
But yeah, that's so because I was alone on an island about the quality of...
Wes got outvoted, so he needed backup.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, he came on and gave a very middle of the road political response where he didn't agree with anybody.
Yeah, never got another invite again.
Anyway, so we've talked about the beard discussion. We talked about the exocomps. Let's talk about what'd you think of the scientific test they did to test the exocomps' intelligence? I felt it was a horrific test.
Yes. Agreed.
You definitely need something more than that. Especially when the exocomp has a shot of it looking back and then going back to work, where it clearly realizes that it doesn't need to escape because there's nothing wrong. Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I appreciate Picard having to check that they aren't actually going to have a warp core meltdown in this test. It's just it's just a test. And they
when you say these things out loud, Russ, it makes me go, did they really have a science advisor on set that was like, yeah, that seems fine?
Yeah,
just have Picard say this.
You know, the scientific method is come up with a easily biased hypothesis, run one test, and then go, well, there you go, there's the answer. That's the answer to that. I guess we don't need to proceed. I did appreciate, I'm surprised they've never done it before, us coming back to Data, who's run the test over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very Data trait, and they never have really shown him to do that.
Yeah, just running figures into the middle of the night type of thing.
Yeah, right. He doesn't need to go to bed, so why wouldn't he be doing things like that over and over again?
Right. Yeah, and he ran it like 50 times with no results, and the minute that he just turned around to talk to somebody, it suddenly worked again.
Right, it worked, it worked by the exocomp replicated a new tool. I was surprised that, like, I felt they were in a corner there, because the scientists had been explaining that was their whole purpose. That they come up with like solutions to problems and they can replicate tools. So Data being surprised by it made no sense to me. And I don't think that even answered the fact as to whether or not it had any sentience to it. It did its job.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
but the tool, so the trick was that the tool that it modified corrected the imaginary fault that they created. So it, you know, the tool modified, it recognized that it was a test, it was a fake thing set off to simulate that this was going to happen, and the tool it modulates corrects for that thing it wasn't supposed to know was there. And so that's what unlocks it for Data.
But that ties into my original point. That doesn't prove anything about whether or not this thing is thinking. It proves it can do what it was designed to do.
Right. It's just doing its job.
Right. So it's like Data's jump to conclusions, Matt, here. It doesn't seem to apply.
But it would say that the test, that one test that they ran for literally 60 seconds didn't work. Like, it saw through the test.
And
then the doctor's response was, are you saying they're smarter than we are? And he's like, no, I'm saying it saw through the test.
That's right. I feel this episode's sort of a product of its time. I feel like the way that we've sort of developed artificial intelligence and the way that we like view computers and everything now would give us a much better understanding of what this is trying to say about it, or at least give us there's really no conflict here besides the fact that you shouldn't just throw sentient creatures into like an explosion, I guess is the thing that they're trying to talk about. But they're very on shaky ground about what they think this is about.
What do you think it's about, Wes?
I think it's about when do you get the rights of a when do you get natural rights? Like, when are you given the rights of a fully sentient creature? They just use horrible terminology, and they're also horrible at explaining why they think it's sentient. Because, you know, you could go down, artificial intelligence is something that's kind of interesting to me, but I mean, at a base level, like, what would define consciousness? Like, if something super complicated, a computer that was so complicated that it seemed to have consciousness, does it really have consciousness? Like, do what we consider to be consciousness, would that be able to be possible in a machine? If not, why not? You know, it just kind of gets to that. And They're so, at a point in the show where they can't explain it.
Right.
What's that? There's a test where if a man can take a test against a machine, if he can't tell, then technically it's alive. Isn't there something?
Is that the Turing, or is that something else?
Yeah, I think it is the Turing, because they talk about it the last episode of Archer, or the last couple episodes of Archer.
I mean, have you guys seen Ex Machina?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Yeah, Ex Machina deals with that, and that does it much more in a much more interesting way. It's a full movie that gets the chance to explore that. But you know, it explores what the difference is between artificial intelligence and like biological life forms, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
And that's what this is trying to do. It just does it so poorly that I have to hold it again. which is too bad. Yeah. I think the real problem is that Data existing here doesn't allow these episodes to make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's kind of a
blockbuster sometimes.
He does. Yeah. Or just like they bring it up, but they bring it up halfway through this where they're having a conference room and Troy is like, "Doctor, why do you fucking think this? You're talking to a living machine."
Right.
And it's like, yeah, I agree. What does she think?
Right. And you're a fan of Dr. Sung's work and you've just created life, but you just don't. You're actually angry about the fact that anyone wants to care about these exocomps and not your mining progress. So it just,
doesn't hold up. I think we've chatted about this one though. We've covered the beer discussion. I do want to say that the exocomps are adorable.
They are.
And the ending legitimately made me feel something at the end here. I thought the ending was well done, even if the rest of the episode was not great.
Yeah.
I like the exocomp sacrificing himself, and
I know it doesn't make any sense, but it is a noble gesture, and it's unexpected. And you know, he sends his two friends back. Like, it's really, it's a sweet moment, and I think that the show is allowed to be cute and sweet.
Right.
Yeah.
One thought I had about, because Tana mentioned that before. So I've been planting flowers, and I've noticed one of the tricks of planting flowers is if you have a bud that's not working. You rip it off because the plant will just keep sending resources there.
Yep. Sure.
And what plants will do is they'll sacrifice some of their limbs in order to save others. And it's not like a noble sacrifice. It's just what basic life does.
Yep.
It's not like, you know, diving on the grenade in Vietnam, like what we're thinking. So when the exocomp did that, that's to me more what it felt like, was just a natural response rather than like a conscious decision.
Interesting.
Yeah.
For that to work, they'd have to be one organism, though, right?
Or you could argue that each one is a cell, and create an organism together.
Or you could argue that they're like honeybees, because honeybees sting and sacrifice themselves. But I don't think you say that honeybees are like sentient creatures. They're just kind of, you know, they're like little biological machines or whatever.
Bees are alive, Wes.
They're alive, not sentient.
They're sentient. They're smart. They know how to make honey.
They can dance.
I think, well, anything that can feel pain and pull back from pain, you could argue is sentient.
I don't know about that. Because I think sensing pain is just a function of maintaining your state of living. So,
yes, you monster.
Like monsters are clearly not sentient, but you can throw them in a pot of water and they try to get out, which makes sense.
Right.
But they don't have anywhere near the nervous system to do anything else.
What is the definition of sentience?
That they would recognize themselves and sort of their existence, basically.
This is a huge discussion. I was hoping we would kind of get into this, but we don't need to make this podcast any longer.
But we have an entire other one, which is all about what
it'll be the same. It does much, much better, I think, in the next one.
Right.
So we'll get to that. But we'll continue this discussion in that episode. Did not go long on this one. We're going to take a break, audio break. I'm going to play a clip. We're going to come back. John, me, and Tana are going to give our final thoughts and ratings for Quality of Life.
Computer, perform a level 1 diagnostic of the Exocomp's command module.
The command pathways are functioning normally.
How can that be? If the interface circuitry is burned out.
The interface circuitry has been repaired.
Curious. Computer, access the Exocomp sensor logs. Confirm that there was a failure in the interface circuitry within the last 12 hours.
Confirmed. Interface failure occurred at 1150 hours today when the Exocomp produced a power surge which burned out the linkage.
How and when was it repaired?
The Exocomp activated a self-repair program at 1340 hours.
Why would the Exocomp burn out its own interface circuitry and repair it 2 hours later?
Unknown.
And we're back. All right, Quality of Life, we just watched it. We're sort of getting through the middling stretch of season six. We're going to give our final thoughts and ratings. Guys, if you're on YouTube, you can click in the upper right-hand corner of the video. There's a little gray circle there with an eye in it. It'll give up a poll function. You can vote what you think this episode is on our scale of 1 to 5. So let's start with you guys, whoever wants to go first. What'd you think of this one? Give me a rating.
Yeah.
I give it a 3 out of 5. I liked it. There were some cute moments. I think it's a perfectly fine episode. I would not show it to Kirsten.
Why is that?
Because I think it's too campy. I think it goes too much to the, like, floating magic, you know, what do you call them? Piggy banks.
Yeah.
And, you know, the mining.
Why are they called exocomps? I'm sorry to interrupt. I
figured it was like exterior computer.
Oh, okay.
That's what I invented.
That's better than anything I would have come up with. So I'm going to go with that too.
Their name being in all caps, and I was trying to think of the like anagram or whatever that they're trying to say, but I can't come up with one.
Yeah.
She might actually say something, yeah, but I definitely don't remember.
I was listening because I'm interested in why she named them exocomps, and I thought exo just because you have, like, you know, exoskeleton and computer, so it's a computer that can do things.
I guess that makes more sense than anything I could come up with, I guess. Interesting. Yeah, when you said you wouldn't show it, I thought for some reason that it would be, I interpreted you as saying it was too investing or something. I was way off with why.
Yeah,
when showing
too campy.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay, yeah,
too right, silly, right. Too eye roll worthy, too much of Kirsten being like, "This show is what you love, Tana." So I need to save the good ones for her. You know,
that's true. I can get along.
Yeah,
with that.
I mean, if you're gonna introduce someone to Star Trek, I feel like you have a top ten that you would probably have. So if it's not 5 out of if it's not 5 stars, then I don't know if I would risk it.
Yep.
Really? Well, we'll finish this with a discussion of that, I guess. But yeah, Sean, give me a rating.
I'm going to go 3 as well. I like what they were trying to tackle, but it felt very middle of the road. I would disagree with the your use of the word sentient, but I know what you're saying as far as what is it alive? What is consciousness? Which is a whole other question, which we can get to in the next podcast.
Absolutely. I'm going to give it a 2 because I think it fits squarely into my... It has an idea that it doesn't really go anywhere with. I think it's kind of a boring episode as well. Like, I'm never very excited while going through it.
Yeah.
The main villain, she's not really a villain, but the main, like, antagonist is not particularly interesting. The exocomps are kind of cool, but I don't understand their place in this universe or the universe of TNG. And one of the most interesting parts of an episode is the sort of non sequitur beard discussion. It doesn't get a 3 from me. So I'm going to give it a 2 out of 5. And that's it. That's Quality of Life.
I have one confession to make. I've been inking this whole time. So when you play this on YouTube, you're probably going to hear my brush and nib and me moving paper around. So
I've been penciling as well. And I'm worried about the same thing. So hopefully you guys don't hear any of that.
May all your paper not have black dots on it or whatever. So, we're done with Quality of Life. We're going to go on to Tana and Sean are going to come back with Shipping a Bottle. So a little bit of a break and then they'll be back. But thank you guys for listening. If you're on YouTube, like in the comments, appreciate it. If you're on iTunes, a rating and review helps get the show out there. You can go to Facebook, facebook.com/ThePenskePodcast. You can leave a like and a comment. That is hugely appreciated. If you like the show enough to support it, go to Patreon, patreon.com/ThePenskePodcast. You can leave $1, $2, $3 in varying amounts. For less than a cup of coffee a month, you can get exclusive content. And the first content we're going to put out is Galaxy Quest.
You could feed a child in Africa for that price.
You could. You can do both, because I assume if you have 1 cup of coffee extra money, you can have 2 cups of coffee extra money in a month. Do all of that in the above. You know what sort of really grinds my gears? And maybe you guys do this. I'm going to say it before you get the option.
Yeah.
The people, when you go to a shopping, when you go to the grocery store and they're doing their fundraising and they ask for $1, 95% of people say no for whatever reason. It makes no sense to me. I feel you should always give the $1.
It depends. If it's a religious thing, especially for me, I no way. Or like any like yeah.
I feel like they're fairly a like I don't go to like Christ Disciples grocery store or anything. Like I just go to the Shaw's that is trying to, I'd assume, avoid any kind of controversy whatsoever with their father. But yeah, just, I mean, look at the thing. If it has a little religious symbol, you can do whatever you want. Or just take that doll, right. Give it to, you know, Red Cross to or you. Doctors Without Borders, or give it to me. Give it to me, and I'll do something with it.
Oh, I thought you meant the people standing outside the store that hit you on the way out.
Oh, that's different. I'm talking about when you're ringing up, because you're already charging something. Like, and they're like,
right.
Do you want a dollar? 95% of people that I watch do it say, no, I don't want to give the doll. And right. I find that very strange.
Well, that's one less dollar for your Patreon, man.
Yeah, so, no, absolutely. Well, guys, thank you very much. If you do support the Patreon, the exclusive content is going to be coming, as I said, Galaxy Quest. Otherwise, we'll be back with another episode. It is Chain of Command after this one. So I'll see you then.
Bye.